Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Terrify Radio. I am your host, Kevin, of Unknown Paranormal, and with me always is Miss Jody. How you doing?
Good.
Well, that's good. Well, hanging in there, we got a bunch of severe weather down here in Texas. Of course, it might be coming your way. It's up in Arkansas right now as well, and my power's flickered on and off twice already. So hopefully I won't lose power during the show.
Excuse me.
Ah, nice one.
Sorry, I just ate, so that felt really good.
Well, it sounds like it.
Yeah, I'm good at that. Woo!
Yeah.
You know, it's funny about the weather today, Kevin, I got to tell you. It was a beautiful day here in St. Louis, but I had a lot of stuff that I had to do because I'm feeling like I have to burp again. I I'm brewing stuff. And so I had to, like, run around and get all this stuff to brew. And I get home and I start my brewing, and it starts thundering and lightning. And it seemed like every time I was stirring the brew, I did three different brews. Each time I was doing them, it was like outside, and then it would like calm down, and then I'd be like stirring it, and it would start back up. So it was kind of weird. I was like, well, perfect weather for, you know, brewing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like a witch.
Well, my luck. This is how my luck is. I took my four-wheeler to work because I had to do some work on it because I'm going out this weekend to do some mudding. And I took the tarp off of it, and I put it out in my next to my boat in the driveway. And I went to work, come back this evening, my tarp's gone because the wind has been blowing, you know, 30 and 40, 50 miles an hour. So my tarp is nowhere to be found, and it's pouring the rain now. So, yeah. That's how my luck works.
Wow. Huh. That
sucks. Oh, yeah. I had to, this will kind of tie in with our guest tonight. My dog, Molly, she gets real anxious and hyped up when there's thunderstorms. And I'll tell you what, that thunder coat, thunder shirt that they advertise, I bought one of those, and I put it on her before the show, and it's storming here, and all she's doing is sleeping.
Wow. Yeah, poor little girl. It's a girl?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but I totally forgot. Shoot. Oh, yeah. I want to tell you about Road Tall. I had round two.
Yeah.
It was, okay, this weekend was just, like, so weird. I get to the airport on Friday, and I get there, and they, like, announce over the speaker that flights are getting canceled the next place that I was going. So I had, like, you know, a stop. And I went up to the desk and I said, listen, I can't miss this flight, so you better get me on another one, you know. I was like, change my flight and get me on another one to get me to Atlanta. I'm like, you know, otherwise you guys are renting me a car and I'm freaking driving from St. Louis and I'm not getting on this plane, you know. Like, I was like telling them what to do. So she actually changed my flight, right? Well, here I am. I'm on my way to my flight, you know, because, like, the St. Louis plane was delayed. So I was, like, running to the next flight. So I get a message from Chad telling me that the flight that I was on got canceled. And I was like, dude, I'm ahead of this weather game, buddy. You know, I'm going to be there. I'm getting on a plane now. So I get on the plane, and I start walking back, and there's Joe Chin. And he looks up, and he's like, Jody, you know, and he, like, sits up. I'm like, hey, you know. So, well, the plane was, like, delayed for 2.5 hours, and the plane was kind of empty, so I went up and we sat with Joe Chin. And so we were hanging out, and after, like, 2 hours and 20 minutes, I was like, screw this, man. We're calling Justin Chase Mullen. We're going to tell him to move this plane, okay? I was like, dude, I'm telling you, the force is with him. He's going to move this plane. And Joe was just sitting there like, yeah, right, you know. So I call up Justin, and I was like, Justin, I've been sitting on this plane for too long. I'm ready for you to move it, okay? So move it. And he was like, all right, let me see what I can do. So we're sitting there, and within 5 minutes, they come over the speaker, and they're like, all right, guys, we got the clear. We're going to be leaving in, like, 10 minutes. And we were told maybe it would take, like, 3 hours. So so then, you know, we get on the plane and we leave. It was just so weird to, you know, like, call him up, ask him to do that, and within 5 minutes, it's happening. So, you know, we joke a lot about how Justin is the real deal. But anyway, so he came to Rhodes Hall, and he actually was a part of the event as a guest to see how everything runs with Ghost Hunt Weekends, because he's going to start doing a lot of events with them. And it was a great night, though. I had some stuff come through on the ghost box that kind of, like, made people scream. But it wasn't anything like I'll Skin You Alive. But, wow. You know, I haven't gotten to the evidence. And there's one that made the whole room scream, but we didn't know what it said. So I got to clean it up and try and figure out what it said. But it was a great night, though. And those people know how Chad knows how to run an event. He does such a good job of it. Chip was kind of sick, but still very much so in good spirits. He's such a good man. And I got to hang out with Chris Lean as well and get to know him a little bit more. And we found out that him and I we have a lot in common. And so I think that Chris and I, I'm going to invite him to do some of the things that I'm interested that I haven't really done yet. So I told him I would let him know when I do it so that he can join and learn a little bit more about it. And I got to meet Chase. Chase, I forget her last name. Oh, she was broadcasting it. She does a lot of UFO stuff. She was probably the nicest woman I have ever met in the paranormal field.
No, that's so cool. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like I met a friend in her, and that I think her and I will be friends for a long time. I'm actually going to go on her radio show. And so I'm looking forward to that friendship. But yeah, Rhodes Hall was awesome. The second time around, Justin had some crazy stuff happen. The floor was vibrating underneath them. And some box fell down in the basement at the same time that the floor was vibrating. And everybody in the room heard it. And then they saw a black shadow person in a mirror walk by.
Wow.
It was a really, really fun time. Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. Of course, everybody that regularly listens to the show, I wasn't on the show last Tuesday. I had a residential case that popped up that day and had to go do a consultation. And then we went back Friday. We had a couple things happen with the motion sensor in the kitchen, but besides that, that could have been a mouse or bug or whatever. We tried to debunk it. We couldn't, but, you know, it's not really what we would call evidence. But other than that, we had a conversation through my new ghost box. I got to actually field test it and had some interesting things come through it. The gentleman that was talking gave us a name and said that he was cousins to the gentleman in the home. And then we started talking to the gentleman that owns the home, and it's a distant cousin of his that they knew in real life. And so that was kind of cool to tie that in.
Cool.
But other than that, we got a investigation in 2 weeks. We're going to investigate Hotel Marshall in Marshall, Texas, which is part of our East Texas Ghost Con. We did it last year. Yeah, and this time it's my team's going to go in and actually do a full investigation of the building. because the only time we've investigated it was during our conference, and, you know, we were more of running the whole thing and making sure everything was running smoothly. So we're going to go in there and see what's up, because a lot of crazy things happened during our conference. So we're going to go in there and see what kind of evidence we can get. It's an 8-story building, so we got a lot of room to roam.
How? Eight stories?
8-story hotel. It was built
Man,
back in the...
Man, you'll be lucky if you get 2 floors done. You know what I'm saying?
We'll get them done. We'll get them done.
Get her done.
What's cool about the owner is he just unlocks the door and tells us to lock the door when we leave. And we have free roam of the place and can stay as long as we want. And you know how much we have to pay? Zero.
Yay. Those are the best.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some really cool things coming up. We're going to Arkansas. In May, we're going to investigate. We did it last year, this building, and we're going back. It's a 10-story tuberculosis sanatorium, and that place, we had rocks thrown at us. One of my girls got grabbed. She had a whole handprint on her arm. 2 people got scratched. A lot of crazy things were going on in that building, and so I'm so pumped to go back to that place. And then we're going to Dallas. Investigate with Justin and Kevin and all Fort Worth Paranormal. We're going to investigate the Boneyards in Arlington, which is an old mall that's been converted into a haunted house, and they got a lot of activity there. Richard Contreras got kicked in the back in that place. So
really?
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. But our guest will be coming in here shortly, and I'm going to talk about him a little bit before he does come on the air. And if I pronounce your name wrong, just correct me when you come on. I am so terrible with pronouncing names. Our guest tonight is Helmut Kramer. He's on the Bio Channel's Haunted Encounters Face-to-Face. It's on Fridays. I believe 8 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern. He's a tech guy, and he also, a big part of what he does is he has a canine that he brings on investigations. He trains dogs to use on paranormal investigations, which I think is really cool, and that's one thing I want to add to my team, put my dog to work. And because I think it'd be really cool to have a canine on the team, as well as I already have a psychic or a few on my team as well. So that would just add another element to our group. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. And I believe he's on now, so let's get him on the air.
I am. I'm here. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Very, very well. Thank you both for having me on tonight. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Glad you guys wanted this kind of trouble.
What? you heard we were trouble? Never.
Yeah.
No.
We just have fun.
We're good
just have
trouble. Fun. We're good trouble, you know? We are.
And well, I am, too, depending on the day of the week, so.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday, right? So everyone's safe. I'm pretty benign. As the week gets a little more advanced is when I lose control. So we'll be safe tonight.
Cool. Well, just to give everybody a little bit of background on you and how you got into this field, what got you started wanting to do paranormal investigating?
You know, I'm probably the one person that's in this field that doesn't have the really kind of cool personal experience story that's kind of thrust them into this.
Yeah.
I always was fascinated with it as a kid. I mean, as far back as I can remember. And, you know, fortunately, my mom let me run with it and then put me in therapy and have it beaten out of me. But it just constantly evolved. And I'm one of those people where I don't just accept things at face value. if you tell me something happened, that's fantastic. But there's certain things that I want to experience for myself. So I always researched it and read things and, you know, watched different things and, you know, kept the interest up and the knowledge level up and eventually just progressed to actually getting out there and trying to have these experiences, you know, for myself. And initially I thought my only apprehension was that I was going to go out and find out that it's not real, that it's sensationalized or it's people that were just more impressionable, wanting these experiences. And I went out really kind of on a hard line saying, you know, I'm not going to, you know, connect the dots. If these aren't real experiences that I can't explain naturally, then I'm not going to make that assumption. And the more I did it and the more experiences I had and the, you know, a lot of things you can't explain naturally, and you can see why the power of suggestion can make you think things are paranormal that aren't. But there's, I've had my fair share of experiences where I now absolutely believe that there's something going on out there, and I just, I love doing it. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like you. I never really had a personal experience in the paranormal. I'd watched it on television. And I was one of these people that I got to, in order to believe something, I got to experience it and see it myself, right? And I had the same kind of inclination. What's going on these shows? I want to see, you know, the real deal. So that's why I got into it. And just like you, you know, the longer you're in it and the more experiences you have, then you're like, there is something going on out here that is, you can't explain. So,
yeah. That first experience, which you, when you just absolutely know that you, there's no explanation for it, changes you to your core.
Yeah. And it's kind of addicting too, because it, even when you have experience, you know, years down the road in this field, when you're dealing with the paranormal, there's always something new that happens that you're just like, what just happened? You know, it's not always the same thing.
Yeah,
it's never
exactly. There's no monotony.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, cool. Now, did I say the times right on your show that you have on the bio channel? Is it 8 o'clock Central, 9 Eastern?
It's 10 Eastern, 9 Central, 8 Mountain.
Okay.
7 Pacific. However, our season finale has already aired, so at this point it would just be marathons or any stray episodes at this point, so you could check for it. Maybe do a search and see. I haven't checked in a little bit. There could be one coming up, but at this point I don't know if they have any more reruns to air at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to have to catch up and watch it online because my satellite, I'm too cheap to get the bigger package that has the bio channel.
I try to tell people if you wear a tinfoil helmet, you can pick it up, but to send me pictures, and no one's bit yet, so.
Oh, my gosh.
My friends are too smart. They're smarter than me. I don't know what to do.
That's right. Now, what are some of the more active locations that you've been to that you've had a lot of great experiences at?
On the show outside, or what?
Either way, you personally, you know, just any place that you have been.
What's that?
Like overall, all the places that you've been to, like what are your favorites?
Oh, I thought you said your mom. I was like, easy.
Hey!
Like, we're already there.
Hey, you know, Stacey's mom's got it going on.
Exactly. I mean, hands down, the most active place that I've ever been is Eastern State Penitentiary. I mean, it was harder to find times, and I'm really tough on things too. I mean, I'm really all about looking for the natural explanations. If it's iffy, throw it out. There was, I mean, more times than not where stuff was going on that I couldn't explain. I mean, it was only an hour episode, but they could have probably easily you know, made it a 2 or 3 hour episode with all the stuff that was happening there. Just walking through, I'm isolated, block 12, walking down. I was just going to set up some trap cams. And, I mean, just clear as day. I mean, I'm walking through, and it's like, you, disembodied whispering. You can hear it just walking through the cell block. And I wasn't even doing anything at that point in time. I wasn't trying to, cause any sort of reaction or anything. I wasn't looking for interaction at that point. I was just setting gear up. And, I mean, yeah. I've got another dozen stories like that where
that's
just that place
that
is – yeah, that place is just – I mean – I've never, I mean, even remotely been anywhere as active as that because I'm, you know, just nonstop stuff going on. So
that was
cool. That was really cool.
Now, you deal with a lot of the tech side of it, right? All the equipment and whatnot. I'm the founder of my group, but me and my tech guy, I'm real tech savvy when it comes to wanting to try new things. What is some of the current stuff that you've been using that has been working for you a little bit or getting results from? I always ask that to people to kind of compare.
You know what? You're going to laugh, but I'm kind of the tech guy that's the anti-tech guy. I really don't dig prefabricated new technology, period.
Uh-huh.
I like to look at different types of things. I look at really unique types of things that, you know, tech is kind of a stretch. I've been doing a lot of work with, entomology and things like that to look and see if there's a connection with insects to the paranormal. I really like old school recording mechanisms, the old reel-to-reels, tape recording types of things, the mini recorders. They use a magnetic recording device. They generate a white noise at the point of recording. Those are the types of things that are going to, in essence, give us a better result. Spirits are thought to communicate through white noise. There's a magnetic presence, typically, as they're drawing the electric energy and the radiation together to manifest in some form. There's no noise canceling. You can go out and buy the best new recorder out there, and it's got noise canceling. It's sampling ambient noise in the room. What that's in essence doing is taking away and not recording the one thing that we're trying to get.
Yeah.
So you take an old school tape recorder and you hardwire in an omnidirectional condenser mic that's powered. You're going to record every possible sound throughout that frequency range in the room. And in essence, probably, in my mind, get a better result than you would with a $500, you know, recorder because it's going to be omitting the types of things we're recording. I like to do other things that are just kind of benign. They're not mechanical, looking at the use of taking things and static electricity. And, I mean, you know, and I have a lot of people I work or that I interact with. There's a lot of people in the community that have some just great ideas. And if we work together and kind of fine-tune these things, you don't have to go out and buy some ridiculous new device because it's the next big thing. You know, just using some household stuff. I my favorite things to use are a lighter and a compass.
Really?
You know, so tech is really an ambiguous term. So, yeah, I'm not really down with, you know, the next thing that someone's out there pushing. I'm probably going to pass on it unless I can be appease that the technology isn't more of an entertainment or a conceptual type of thing. There's so many things where I've tried different things and they're fallible. A lot of these things that are supposedly picking up on the same bioelectric energy that we're generating is a great concept, but if it can be affected by radio frequency, then at that point in time when this is going off, you don't know if someone's using a walkie-talkie, a CB radio, a ham radio, or there's a ghost hanging out with you. So it really kind of gives you skewed results. So I like to take things that are a little more organic and try and implement those and then build off of that. So that is really my role as a tech guy. So like I said, is you know, tech, you know, it's a relative term. I like the old school stuff, and I think you get a more organic result. But that's just my opinion. But it's been pretty effective.
Well, you know, go ahead, Jody.
Okay. I was going to say I totally agree with you. I actually spoke at this event one time, and, you know, I just decided to talk about, like, the old school paranormal and how, you know, we should really think about bringing that back into the paranormal. You know, things that Nostradamus used, and people thought he was a tripper. He, you know, gazed into water and fire, and also mirrors. There's mirror gazing. My biggest question to you is, with the old school, what is it you're doing with a compass and a lighter?
Basically, if you have, you always have to check, it's just like baseline readings. You have to check your environment. If you're in a place that's relatively, and you know, you can't always say definitively, but there's no drafts, open windows, hopefully the weather outside is calm, the HVAC, you know, if there's any ventilation, those types of things, you really got to be conscious of, especially if you're looking for any sort of a visual type of evidence type of report, because you really, if you're using a lighter, I'm not telling anyone what to do. I would never present any visual evidence while I'm using a lighter, ever. So you have to really be focusing on one type of thing. You can't just go out there with these, you know, for example, we can talk about the dog later. I would never present audio when the dog's around. So you, when you're using certain things, you really need to be conscious as to what types of contamination are possible and be able to immediately dismiss those types of things. So with the lighter and the compass, again, when the working theory that most people are buying into, including myself, is that whatever it is that ghosts are doing to form, to manifest, either show themselves or be present, to communicate, that there's that draw of the electromagnetic radiation and the energy that's pulled together is why you're feeling cold spots, because as it draws energy, it's creating a temperature void. And those are the types of things that are going to react to an EMS sensor. But the most organic piece of tech, for lack of a better term, is a compass. It's going to put, you leave it on a level surface, it's going to be pointing magnetic north. If a ghost chooses, and I believe that, you know, again, my working theory, I always have to preface everything because people get angry and say you don't know it all. I believe that ghosts are actually the spirits of people that lived before us, that have died. And so if that is the case, and when they choose to interact with you, because they used to be alive, they still have their free will, there's no magic words or machine that can force them to communicate with you. If they choose to interact, it's going to draw that energy. And I've had it happen before where the compass will kick. There's no reason for, you know, there could be some geomagnetic explanation. But if you're sitting there and you're watching it and the needle kicks and you can get some corresponding types of evidence, like an EVP at the same time, which I've had happen many times, it's just another layer of evidence. The compass needle moving on its own is not paranormal. However, if you get a really cool EVP at the same time the compass moves, at that point in time, then you've got an additional layer of evidence that I think is probably more trustworthy than a lot of devices that we use that have been incorporated into the paranormal. The lighter is also kind of works hand in hand with that. As energy is drawn, it's creating the temperature variations. The lighter you can actually see, and I like it over the candle, because the candle is drawing wax up into the wick. That's how it burns. And so you're going to get the flickers more often. So I like to use a Zippo. So, again, the same thing. If you're getting movement, and you obviously have to, you know, watch voices, or, excuse me, speaking, and, you know, as you exhale, you can affect the flame. But things like that, if the temperature might change, if something's manifesting or drawing the energy, you're going to get a color variation in the flame because it's cooling off. So it's going to turn a darker orange. It could disrupt the flame pattern. You know, there's a variation of different things that could happen. Again, if the flame flickers, doesn't mean anything. But if you add all of those things together, you are just having additional layers of evidence. And fire is, you know, I don't like the term trigger object, but it is. It's something that's relatable. And a lot of times you can invoke reactions. I've had many EVPs that are intelligent responses to something dealing with the flame itself. It's a universal thing. If you've lived on this planet, you've dealt with fire in some capacity. So, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons I do the things that I do, but the main reason that I do the things that I do It's because they work. If they don't work, I quit doing it. If they do work, I keep using it. I mean, it's all about getting results. I mean, seriously, if you two ever got out and said, man, I really hope we don't get anything tonight. Nothing.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
I've had
trying,
it happen.
You know, I've had it happen many times, and it's not cool, you know, to, you know, go spend, you know, 10 hours in a building doing everything you possibly can and getting absolutely nothing. But that's not why we do it. We go out to try and get, you know, answers and, you know, some kind of response and, you know, validate whether or not these places do have the activity and all that. So it's all about finding things that work and expanding on it, you know, making them work better or finding new different types of techniques. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, I mean, that's the definition of insanity. I mean, exactly, not doing the same thing, expecting a different result. I mean, you're not going to have a ghost come out and say, you know what, this is the time you got my attention. You know, what do you need to know? Let's break this down. I'm going to give you all the answers. You know, you've been so persistent. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with you as well. I mean, we still get, every now and then, we get some new devices just to kind of try out. But my team has decided this year to kind of go backwards, per se, and we're going to start studying the elements, fire, water, limestone, and actually set up experiments to test all those rocks, you know, quartz and whatnot, and see what the tie-in with the elements that God put on this earth, what that ties in with paranormal, because, you know, the Indians were very spiritual, and they didn't have all these devices, right? And so we're gonna go into that. And, you know, like you were talking about new things, you know, I have a lot of friends that are in the paranormal field that are more scientific. And, you know, a lot of the variations, like you talk about, you know, they're prevalent. I mean, how much do we really know that us as a paranormal investigator, our body as a human influences the environment? And so we're going to do some experiments to kind of take the human element out, where maybe the results will be more valid.
That's interesting. I mean, that's not a bad idea. I mean, one of the biggest variables out there is us.
Yeah, because one thing that we're going to try, just to see, you know, how we always go in and we ask questions, right? And sometimes we may know the history of the building, so we might know the answer. Like if we say, what's your name, and we know the names of prevalent in the history of the building, well, then it's in our mind. Well, scientifically wise, what if you went in and you held up a poster board and you don't know what the question is on the front of it, and you walk around not saying a word, running your EVP recorder, holding up questions. So you don't know the answer to it as it being a human being. You don't even know what the question is. So if you get an answer on your EVP recorder to the question, that could be more valid evidence.
That's a really good idea. Actually, Jordan on our team had brought that up to me, that we were thinking about potentially doing something like that, because, you know, it's easy to kind of there's a theory out there. A good friend of mine, Steve, is a huge proponent of this, that, again, being bioelectric, isn't it more feasible that we're imprinting our own thoughts on these recorders versus the outlandish concept that, you know, dead people are talking to us? We're electric beings. We're recording to electronic devices. I think that's an absolutely a plausible explanation. So if you eliminate the variable where you're thinking the answer, the intelligent, if you're to walk in with a, you know, something you couldn't know, it's in a sealed envelope, you know, how is that, that would be interesting. I mean, that would really kind of take away that argument if you're getting an intelligent response to something that you couldn't know.
Yeah, I mean, we got that thought because during, you know, it's kind of cool how when you go on these investigations, you try something at the spur of the moment, and then something happens, you get a result, and then it just guides you into another direction. We were running a ghost box, SB7, and we tried something where we didn't know the answer to. We randomly picked a coin. My buddy picked a coin out of his pocket, didn't look at it because, of course, we're in the dark. He tossed it up in the air and said, call it heads or tails, and we got a tails through the ghost box, and we turned on the flashlight and looked on the ground, and it was tails. And then we turned the flashlight off, and we said, now tell us the date or the year that is on the coin, and it came through 1982, and then we turned the flashlight back on, and that's what it was. So,
nah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, and that's what kind of spurred us into doing this, is that experience right there.
And see, and that's what I'm talking about. I mean, these little spur-of-the-moment things, like, you know, let's try this, and you're very well, you could be onto something. It could be something so simple that's a concept that could really, you know, identify, you know, trailblaze a new way in the future to get a more interactive type of reaction. I mean, going back to what I was saying before, I believe that ghosts can, you know, they're free will, just like we are. If I walk into a room and start yelling, what's your name? Why are you here? How many's with us? I'd walk out. I'd be like, really? No, not this again. If you do something to actually engage them in a way to where they choose to communicate with you, which was always my theory, is you're going to get a better result. If I walk in and say something interesting, I very rarely ask questions in EVP sessions. I'll have a one-sided conversation and get a better result. I'm talking, if you want to talk back to me, it's going to be relevant to your time period. That's why I reached out to Dan and Jordan. The stuff they were doing with history was so unique and cool. I mean, I knew history was so important. So many people overlook it. It's just easy to go in. What are the reports from the other groups that were here ahead of us? Oh, there's a 6-foot-tall or 8-foot-tall ghost named Jim that hangs out here. And you're going to go in and spend all night trying to talk to Jim. Well, spend a little time at the library looking at microfiche, doing some research, and there's no explanation for that. But, hey, look, some kid had something bad happen to it. Back in the day, this is documented, no one talks about it, and you go in and you get, you know, an intelligent response that's based off of that type of research. So they took it to a whole new level. I'm like, how do you use history in a way that's going to engage them? And I watched their evolution, and what they were doing was so cool and unique, and it appeared to be effective. I thought that was great, and it really is to sit there and see that for the first time. So, I mean, it's a technique. I mean, it's not a piece of technology. It's not anything you got to go to the store and buy. It's something they worked on, developed, and, I mean, I, you know, from the very beginning of this conversation, I'm not the guy that accepts things at face value. If you tell me something, that's fantastic. But if I have the experience and I've gone through my check downs and all that and I can't find an explanation for it, then we might be on to something. And so to go and watch them and really kind of scrutinize and participate in these things was crazy. I mean, to get that type of result, and it was legitimate, and it was just, you know, it's that type of thinking that's really going to help all of us get to the next level and quit running in place. So, you know, hats off to, you know, that free thinking like you were just talking about, just to, you know, come up with these things. That's what we all need to do.
Yeah, and, you know, I've noticed, too, I always try to compare notes to everybody I talk to out there in the field. It, to me, I've gotten a pretty good result asking different folks about this, but it seems like you get more EVPs, more conversations from the spirit world when you're just having a conversation with your other team members. You may not even be investigating at that point. You might be taking a break or talking about the football game or whatever it might be, and all of a sudden they chime in and they'll talk over you on the EVP recorder.
Absolutely, and that's such a great point because, like I said, you know, I mean, don't even look at them. I mean, they were, as you know, again, I already got my disclaimer out there. They were people, as far as I'm concerned. You walk into a bar, close your eyes, and put your hands out and start yelling, "Who's in here with me? What's your name?" No one's going to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you walk in there and you know, you walk into a bar and say the Raiders suck, you know, you'll probably get knifed, but you're going to get an interaction.
Right.
So those are the types of things, is how to get them to choose to communicate with you. How do you get them to tell their story? And so the same thing goes in when you're having a conversation. What you're talking about is probably relevant to the location. It's interesting to them. They're going to put their 2 cents in there. And you're right. I've got every bit as many intelligent responses based off of conversations when you're, you know, and it's by design, too. I mean, it's not even... You know, I'm not trying to trick the dead into talking to me, but the whole thing is like, you know, it doesn't seem like we're getting much of a response, so let's talk about it. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're like, yeah, we're here.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, which really intrigued me when you called in for a little bit on my show Sunday, was about the use of dogs in the paranormal.
Yes.
Now, when did you start bringing dogs into the paranormal yourself? When did you start using them on an investigation?
I trained for quite a bit before I took them out into the field. I've grown up with dogs my whole life, and obviously, as aforementioned, I've always loved the paranormal. And I've really kind of, you know, there's always people saying that, hey, my dog's sensitive, sees ghosts, has this intuition, reacts weird after certain things happen and all that. And most oftentimes, there's an actual explanation. But I found what appeared to be an incredible marriage between the two fields. I did scent work training actually with my black lab, Bailey, which is kind of the basis for drug and bomb sniffing, cadaver dog search and rescue, forensics. Basically, you're teaching the dog, because dogs, their sense of smell is just incredible. It's like all of our senses put together and some. They have an olfactory system, which is almost like a tiny brain that breaks down. They almost see scent. There's no better way to explain it, but that's their primary sense. And they can smell, just think if you could smell twice as well as you can now. The dog on average can smell over a million times better than we can. You know, bomb dogs can smell one grain, one thousandth of a gram of explosive two sections away in an outdoor stadium. I mean, it's ridiculous what they're capable of doing. Cadaver dogs have been known to identify drowning victims 80 feet underwater in open water.
Yeah.
So to take the fact that there is chemical emissions in ozone and other things when electromagnetic radiation, electromagnetic energy, electricity is all present, which I mean, you might have gone somewhere haunted house or something where they've got the Jacob's ladder, the Tesla coils, and you can just smell the electricity. Or maybe, you know, just poorly wired types of things. You know, I'm sure everyone smelled that before.
Yeah.
Well, that's a common smell for dogs. They're smelling it all the time. They're smelling all kinds of things all the time. So what I was able to figure out is by using an EM pump, which synthetically generates an electromagnetic field, is that I could teach my dog to smell that. I mean, he's smelling it anyhow, but to identify the smell. Just like if I wanted him to, you know, be a drug-sniffing dog, you know, you would teach him to identify the smell of weed or crack or, you know, whatever you're trying to identify. So just continued on and kept the training up with that. And the funny thing is he was doing things that I hadn't even anticipated. There's a dog training facility that I do a lot of training with, who I would go lease out there. They got this huge room, and I go, you know, rent it out for them. You know, they'd rent it to me for $5 for, you know, a couple hours, and would go in there and train with them. You know, they have all kinds of props and things in there, and I'd go hide this thing, and he'd, you know, tool around in there and sniff it out and identify it. And so when it got to a certain point, if I would hide it too well, there was a pole in the middle of the room. And he'd keep going to that pole, and he was what's called alerting, which is basically the end game. Hey, here it is. Here's what you want me to, you know, what you've told me to go find. And I couldn't figure out what he was doing. Finally, I went over, and I was like, what, you know, what is going on? And he just was alerting at this pole. Well, finally, I quit being a stupid human and went and grabbed an EMS sensor and went back over, and they had a transformer built onto the pole that was actually an energy converter, and it was putting off about a 5-point milligauss. And so when it was hard for him, he was going to his default where there was that energy was actually being put off by a bad plug, a poorly wired plug.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Which let me know, I'm like, hey, you know what, this is for real. So the last thing I ever wanted to do, I'm a purist. I don't want to go out in the field and do something that's going to be a slap in the face to dog training or the paranormal. So when I got to that certain point, I realized that it was okay for me to take him out in the field. So I think I've been training him for about 9 months, which is about 3 years ago. And then I took him out into the field, and, you know, immediately we're getting relevant. You know, the first couple times, you know, there were some iffy things, but after a couple times, we were getting some relevant stuff. Got it on film where he had actually identified a moving shadow figure. And
wow.
We could only see it in the camera where he went and lunged at it. And this is the
wow.
second part of the training that I didn't know what he was doing. I just thought, you know, he was kind of freaking out. But he's not a very vocal dog. He doesn't bark all the time or anything. And he lunged, barked, kind of charged, and then came back into a defensive stance to protect me. And basically he's like, what the hell is that? And after reviewing the tape, there was a shadow figure that ran across the back of the chairs and then forward in the same direction he was going right at it, which we didn't see. And there was two of us there, and I was the one in back, so there was no other, you know, you could say it was an IR shadow or something like that. And, you know, obviously through angles and all that, it was, you know, very easy to disprove that it was anything besides, you know, very potentially paranormal. And that's where the training got hard. I had to train myself. Because I realized the real benefit to having a canine in the field is having their reaction. We watch scary movies. We get desensitized. We hear the claims. We know the history of these locations. You go in and you try and be open-minded, but you are open to suggestion. You think there's a possibility you could be dealing with some people where these extraordinary events occurred. So dogs don't. They're like, oh, it's a cool place, and we're hanging out, and we're getting ready to go play my game where I smell that thing, and you reward me, and that's what it's all about. They don't have that preconceived notion. And what I was missing, and I feel really stupid about it, was the animal behavior aspect of it. When he's got his nose down to the ground, and he's working hard because he wants to, you know, dogs aim to please. When he wants to complete his task,
yeah.
And something knocks him for a loop that startles him so much, and he's a tough guy. I mean, you know, he's not a nervous dog by any means. He's all kinds of confident, and which I think is very important to have a dog out in this field.
Yeah.
But when he gets thrown off, and that was what I was missing. And working with dogs my whole life, I was ashamed to find out in reading books, talking to real behavioralists, not people who say they are or say they're dog trainers, but people that really have degrees in the field. No one, I don't care how long you've had dogs or what you've done, understands canine behavior because we tend to humanize their behavior. If a dog's smiling, you know, it's because they're happy. You know, we look at things and say, this is what I think it is because that's what I would do in that situation. Dogs evolve from wolves. They still have their instincts and all that, and to humanize their behavior is criminal. So I read a bunch of books and talked to a lot of people and realized I had to unlearn everything I knew about dogs and relearn it and understand the little nuances and little things like facial expressions, facial tension, the way they hold their tail. You know, there's one thing where someone said, you know, on the show, the dog really reacted to something, he's wagging his tail. No, wagging your tail is one thing. Flagging your tail when your tail is straight up and the tip is flagging is a defensive thing. You can look at, you know, I mean, it's real easy. Look it up. Go Google flagging tails. And that's the types of things that it's real easy to miss. And that is basically it's come at me and you're going to be in big trouble. It's not an aggressive. I keep wanting to default to that. It's a warning. It's a cautionary thing that I have identified you as danger. You're a threat to me or something I care about. You back off. And that's what that is. So when a dog throws its tail straight up in the air and the tip bends over and it's waving, that's what that is. So to understand these little types of things, how he holds his body, leaning forward is a curiosity. You know, holding themselves low is a submissive type of thing. So to understand all these little things and identify, because guess what? Dogs are dogs, and they're in an unfamiliar atmosphere, and everything reaction is not paranormal by any means. But if he reacts towards a corner of a room in a way that he's feeling threatened and I don't see anything, that's definitely time for me to really focus and review and see if we can come up with something. But okay. If he just kind of barks or, you know, I can watch his body language, he might just have been excited by something, and I'm not going to pay attention to it at all. I'm going to immediately dismiss it. So that was the hard part, not training him, but training me.
Yeah.
you probably don't know much about me, like, and how I got started, but I have a 17-year-old son that started seeing ghosts when he was about 3 years old. And when he was 11 and he was going through puberty, like, it got so bad. And, you know, he came to me one day and told me he thought he was schizophrenic. And I told him, no, you're not. You know, our house is haunted, and I'm going to prove it to you, but I think that you have a gift, you know what I mean? And I'm going to prove it to you. So I contacted this lady over in Alton at Mineral Springs, and I brought my dog with my son, and he was a lab. He was a lab and part greyhound. And so I thought, you know, if I bring my dog, my son will feel like, you know, protected with him. And I ended up hunting with him for about 2 years until he passed away. And I went, and after he passed away, I waited about a year, and I got a part wolf and Siberian husky and thought, okay, I'm gonna train him so that he can come with me. And come to find out, I went through 2 rounds of training, and he was so bad, and he's still so bad. I can't control him. So I could not take him, you know, to these places, and he's just so ornery. But while I was doing these training sessions with him, the trainer actually kind of had a theory about dogs and their vision and how they see in the dark, and how she has a theory that they kind of see in thermal image. That's how they see in the dark and stuff. They kind of
yeah.
See.
I can go in. I can actually go into that in a minute.
Okay.
But yeah, they see really different than how we do.
Yeah.
Oh. Did you want me to talk about that now or?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's kind of where my story was leading to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know if there was like some kind of a reaction.
No,
yeah, that was tied into
well,
that.
Well, my dog did do really awesome things, and he was just an amazing tool. So I'm a firm believer in what you're doing with the dogs, and, you know, I hope that you continue to do that and have great success at collecting stuff with that, because I'm a firm believer in them. And animals, they're not jaded like us. You know what I mean?
Exactly, and that's one of the best things. I mean, they're not going in with, you know, some kind of expectations. Doesn't matter if they're going into a 100-year-old abandoned building or a brand new, you know, facility. I mean, to them, they're just with their people and doing whatever they want to, you know, just being dogs.
They don't see it any differently.
Exactly. But it's interesting, too, you mentioned there was a wolf Siberian husky, because it's funny, some people don't recognize or actually realize that all dogs, from your Chihuahua, Yorkies, whatever, up to your elk hounds, evolved from wolves. You know, over the last 20,000 years, humans took wolves and through selective breeding created dogs. It's one species of animal that we made for all intents and purposes through breeding. They would find the nicer wolves and breed them together. And they would create nice wolf pups and so on and so forth. And throughout the years, they would take certain traits and put those together. And that's how every dog that's on the face of this earth, that's where they all came from. But Siberian Huskies and Malamutes are the two closest things to wolves, and then taking a wolf itself. They don't water down through selective breeding some of these senses. You look at a pug, they have those short little snouts. They can smell maybe 1,000 times better than we can. A bloodhound can smell about 10 million times better than we can. So there's this huge variation in the different types of senses that dogs have. You've got your sight hounds, like your Salukis and greyhounds and whippets. And I mean, their sight is incredible. But it all goes back to the wolves, and it's the survival. That's why this sense of sight is the way it is. Dogs cannot see very well in well-lit areas. You might have had a dog and be out playing and throwing a tennis ball, and if the ball's not moving, the dogs can step on it and still not see it. they see, people say they're colorblind, and that's not really the case. They see in hues of like purple, blue, and yellow. So it's funny you say that it's like in infrared, it kind of would, if we were to see through their spectrum of light, which is far more limited than ours, then yeah, it would probably look like some kind of a thermal image or something like that. Now, their retinas, their corneas, their eye setup, they can, their eyes will take in about twice as much light as ours. What that means is they have incredible low light vision. Again, this is a survival type of thing. So anything that moves in low light, they will be able to see. I mean, from, you know, they can see a candle in a window from miles away at night just due to the flickering of the flame. Well lit day out on the field, they're not going to see very well. So that is another reason why they're better equipped just basically by being dogs than we are in the field. Their eyes are set apart on the sides of their head. How many times have you been out there, and I know everyone listening, if you've seen, I just saw something out of the corner of my eye. I just caught some movement. I just can't confirm. Mm-hmm. I know I saw something, though.
Yeah.
Everyone. That's not a problem for them because their eyes are set apart. If you went and put your, if you put your head right in front of your dog, touch noses, your dog's going to go cross-eyed and your dog can't see you. There's a little blind spot that's about, you know, 12, 18 inches in front of their face. But they've got that peripheral vision. They've got that low-light ability, and they have, I don't want to get too technical, but if you have a 60 hertz TV, that's our eyes refresh rate. We're seeing about 60 frames a second with our own eyesight. Dogs are twice that. So that's why you think sometimes that your dog's a ninja, because they can snatch a fly out of the air or whatever. They're actually seeing things almost in slow motion because there's no blur. It's like they're 120 megahertz. So they're seeing things with a faster refresh ratio because they're seeing things. They're equipped to be able to spot a rabbit running through the woods at a quarter mile away because that's how they survived. And so those are the types of things that we need to recognize. So they can't see in pitch black, but they can take any ambient light in the room. It's like a slow shutter speed on a camera, where if you let a, you know, there's a little teeny light crack and it's going to look like the whole room is illuminated if you let the shutter stay open for 20 seconds. It's a similar concept. So they can see the little things. They can see the shadow figures as we would in a regularly well-lit room. And that's the thing. Dogs can't see. You know, if a dog's looking upstairs, I've had people say it all the time, my dog's staring in a corner. And I think it's looking at a ghost. It's just staring there. No, your dog's probably just, you know, smelling something, because if there was something in that corner, you would see it better than they would. And that's the one thing a lot of people don't realize. Dogs don't have, like, x-ray vision to see into the spiritual realm. They can see much better than us in the dark, and much worse than our standard abilities are in regular lighting. So,
are you on Facebook by any chance at a computer?
Yeah, but I try not to look. I'm very easily distracted.
Okay, I just...
So if I see a chat room, a joke, you'll lose me for the rest of the night or something like that. So I just have to turn away.
I put my wolf on your page so you could see him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's so beautiful. He's all white with blue, light blue eyes. And,
oh, wow.
He's 2 years old, so he's still in that puppy crazy. He tears my house up. I would take him to puppy classes, and he would be like, watch this. I'm going to ace this test, right? And he'd do everything he was supposed to do. And then we'd come home, and, like, he would tear up everything. And then we'd go back to class, and he'd like, watch this, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God. So I ended up, after the second round of puppy classes, I ended up taking him to the vet and saying, okay, I thought I was getting a Siberian Husky, and this thing is like twice the size. He is as big as my mother's standard poodles. I was raised with standard poodles my whole life. And he's as big as the, you know, her standard poodles. He's just gigantic. And the vet said, well, you're trying to train a wolf, honey. You know? And I'm like, okay. And, like, he'll do, like, wolf things. Like, when he goes, he tries to grab you, and he'll, like, reach his paw out and, like, try and pull you to him, like, sideways.
Yep.
And then, like, his tail is, like, just huge and bushy, but he's really tall, like, you know, Siberian Huskies are like medium-sized dogs.
Mm-hmm.
he stands taller than my mother's standard poodle. He's huge.
Yeah, so, and you can tell by looking at it, because sometimes, you know, you might just assume that there might be some kind of a Malamute or a larger working dog in there, an Akita.
Yeah.
But you look at the face, and it's very indicative of a wolf. It's got the narrow face. Usually when you get with the larger breeds that are like the husky types, there's something called a Sapola husky, which is a tall, leaner version. But, you know, I can absolutely see that. And, yeah, your work's going to be cut out for you, because they are so – their instincts are so strong in wolves and huskies and those types of breeds.
I've seen him get mad. And, oh, man, I was just like, holy hell, like a dog tried to get him in the butt. he about tore that male dog up. It was a lab. And that thing came towards him, and he was like, hell no. And, like, his fangs came out, and you're like, you know, like, we had to go put the lab away. But, and then,
you
like,
gotta watch out for small animals, too. Their instincts, you don't see huskies very often that will give a cat or a small dog a free pass. I mean, that's their main prey is rabbits and all that. So
we have a cat, and, like, he goes to try and eat it all the time. He'll just walk up to her and, like, bite her, you know, and she's like, meow. But, you know, they're still buddies. But, yeah, his instinct is he even bites my kids. Like, my daughter will just be sitting on the ground, and he'll just walk over and just knock her over and bite her arm. And then she'll be like, aah. But then, you know, they'll lay on my bed, and, like, she'll beat him, and he'll just lay there and love it and lick her, you know. So, I mean, it's like a yin-yang, but he's never done anything so bad that I've been like, oh, you know, he can't be with us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
I'm not really worried about him. I'm really hoping that the vet said by the time he's three, he'll calm down so much that after three, he will be one of the best dogs that I will ever have.
Yeah, you have to get past some of that stuff, and absolutely, they get more acclimated to their surroundings and all that. I mean, the funny thing is, nothing that you told me surprised me. I mean, the whole grabbing your kid and all that, that's pack behavior. That's pack animal behavior, and wolves are pack animals. And like I said, they're so close to the you know, wolves haven't evolved much. I mean, they pretty much got to a point where they were perfectly evolved to their surroundings, and there's no real Darwinism when you already get to where you need to be. They're very similar to what they were 100,000 years ago. And, you know, there's not much evolution there. But, yeah, the grabbing, you know, that's basically just identifying, hey, I'm here and you're part of my family. Where, you know, it's kind of frowned upon as a human to just go and grab someone and throw them on the ground just because they're, you know. This, again, identifying the difference between animal and human behavior. I mean, there's some people I like to go grab and throw on the ground, but because I think they're family.
Like, you know, I have twins that are 7 and a 4-year-old daughter. And, you know, sometimes they'll get going and they'll be running through the house chasing each other. And he'll think, oh, my God, this is, you know, woohoo, you know. And next thing you know, he, like, will just plow down one of my 7-year-olds. And they're like, put him away, I hate him. So thank God I have a big house. I also have, like, friends with a lot of land that I take him to, and I let him just run and be, you know, like, be free. And sometimes I'll go and drop him off at night and come back the next day and get him, and he loves it, you know. He's beat when he gets home. He's just like, oof. He'll sleep for about 7 hours, but, you know, first he's got to get up that house. Because
it's so necessary, though. If you take a working dog like that and you don't let them get out and play and all that, they'll go crazy. They'll dig up your yard.
Yeah.
They'll try and run away. They'll tear everything up.
He was doing that. You know, it's been winter here, so we've kind of been in the house a little bit more. And I went out to clean up the backyard. And within 1 week, he put about 5 holes in my backyard. And Ben was trying to dig a hole in the fence next to the neighbor's yard to, you know, get out or something. Like, he's like, whoa, you know, I got to go. But
yep, it's just that nervous energy. So if they don't get their RDA of play, you're going to know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm hoping that, you know, maybe when he's three and he calms down a little bit, that I can start training him. Now, do you train other people's dogs for them?
No, but because I think you can get away with that in, like, military and police applications. I think people should train their own dogs, but I really want this to catch. I don't want to be the only person out there doing this, but I also want people out there doing it the right way, because if you're just grabbing Fido and saying, you know what, we're going to go ghost hunting and we're going to, you know, let's bring the dog. You know, I really don't recommend that. I'm not ever the one to tell people what to do. But if you want anything credible and, you know, working together and people putting in the work, I think this is, I mean, you can't buy this technology. I don't care if it's $10 million. Dogs can do stuff that technology cannot replicate, period. They have a sense of smell is directional. You know, you have to walk into an EMF field with your Melmeter or your K2 for it to go off. Dogs have those little slits in the side of their nose. They can smell the direction that a smell is coming from. There's no technology that can do that. I mean, and that's just one example. So to be able to harness this stuff and work in unison with our canine partners, there's so much that people can do, and I don't want to do it on my own. I really want people to reach out and all that, and so I am going to work with people. Anyone that reaches out to me that's got the conviction and the desire to do it, I'm going to help them step by step. I don't care if we got to do Skype calls or whatever it is, because I really want to legitimize this aspect of it. I think it's something that's an untapped resource. And when more people start doing it.
I have a location here. I told you about Mineral Springs. It's kind of like my stomping ground, and I can go over there like any time. My other dog, he just kind of like, I never really trained him on like trying to find, like putting an EMF or EM pump anywhere and trying to have him find it. I never really focused on that. I just kind of let him do, it was more like he was with my son and, but you know, I would take him through a walkthrough. And there was one location that really stands out with him investigating there. And he wouldn't go in this one room, would not go in this area that led into the bathroom. And he was barking and barking and, like, took off. And it was really, he didn't hardly bark either. So it was really weird. And then, like, later that night when we were investigating, a toilet flushed in one of the bathrooms.
Okay.
By itself. Yeah. So that really impressed me. And, you know, I just felt like, wow, he didn't like that area. And then later on, something happened there. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's the type of stuff I'm talking about. So here's a crash course real quick. I'm going to tell everyone listening right now the first couple things you need to do. And then if you're interested in doing this, I mean, I worked a long time developing this thing and I've got the results. So I have absolute confidence that this works. You know, the first thing is to make sure that your dog has confidence. If your dog is a little more submissive or passive or nervous, you really shouldn't bring your dog out in the field, because we emit, when we're scared or frightened or anxious or excited, pheromones. Those are the types of things, and I've seen people do it where they're taking these dogs out. They smell that, and they know that there's something dangerous. They're scared, and then they become defensive, and it's cruel, and you're not going to get any type of result because the dog's going to be snapping at the air and overreactive. So the first thing is to make sure you got a dog that's confident and has basic training for safety purposes, you know, one that has a decent recall, you know, a come when called. You know, you don't want a dog that's running off that's going to, you know, could create danger or anything like that. So you have those basic pieces in. The way you train scent training, and you get any EM pump or parapump or whatever, flood the room with noise. Use, you know, your PX or whatever you're using, something to generate noise. Spirit box is good. So you're creating a diversion, a distraction. You hide it, and you put a treat on it, a high-value treat, like maybe a piece of a hot dog or something like that. And at the very beginning, you go with your dog, you give them the command, whatever you're going to use, you know, find a ghost, whatever you want to say, and you kind of walk with the dog, and they go find the treat. And the second they eat that treat, it's the best thing they've ever done. You're praising, you're petting, you're good job, you know, and you keep doing that, but then you increase the difficulty. You know, hide it a little better, and then you quit going out with them. You make them, you know, they have to find it on their own. Well, after you do this enough, then you take away the treat. Because now they're going to be finding, because what you've done before is you created a nice little bouquet of hot dog and electricity. Now you're taking away the hot dog, and so you got to be relatively close to it, but you don't want to give it away. So as soon as the dog finds it and they're identifying it, at that point in time, then you're rewarding them. And then I can, in the future, you know, if anyone's interested, I can go into how to, you know, teach your dog to identify it. I have captains sit and look at me and turn around and look at me. And then if I ask where it is, I have them paw at it. But there's different ways to have your dog do what's called alerting. But that's the basics that what you'd want to do to teach your dog to smell out EMF. And if you consistently do it maybe 3 times a week, probably within a couple months, your dog is going to be proficient enough to realistically be out in the field. And then mm-hmm. the next step would be reading and understanding animal behavior, which you can do at your own leisure. And again, if you're interested, reach out to me. I've got several books where just reading one book in itself, there's a couple illustrated guides, will probably give you enough to be dangerous to understand when your dog's being a dog or when your dog is feeling threatened and those types of things. You put those pieces together, and it's OJT. The more you get out there, the more you experience these things and all that. So that's how you train your dog to be a parapup.
Yeah, I told you Sunday, I got she's not a full-blooded German Shepherd, but I got her at the pound, and she looks like a German. She's not as big as a German Shepherd, but damn, she is smart as hell. And yeah, I'm talking about you. She's sitting next to me on the couch right now.
She's like, tell them how pretty I am, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's 40 years old, so I was, you know, I have some sensitives on my team and whatnot, and I always thought, man, if I added the canine element to the team, you know, we do scientific stuff, we have sensitives, and then add a canine involved in that, I think it would just be a more vast amount of different things that we could come across, and so, yeah, I definitely want to train her up and start taking her along with me on investigations.
Yeah, that's what it's all about,
Kevin,
trying to find as many things.
Huh?
Well, Kevin, you've been talking about this for a while, too.
Yeah, I have.
I've mentioned this before about using her, and I think you should.
Yeah, I even have, she has her own paranormal shirt.
I'm looking forward to it. Let's do it. Let's get her up and running.
Do you have a little backpack for your dog with things that you bring for him when you go? Does he have a flashlight or anything? Like, I used to put a flashlight on my dog's collar just so it could see in the dark where it was walking, just hanging.
Yeah, I've done a couple things. I actually had a neoprene harness that I'd had him wear, and I actually had retrofitted it with I took apart an old K2 meter and just kind of took the guts out and put it on there because I thought if he's identifying a field in the K2 kicks, I don't need to go over there and try and measure it externally with something else. So if all of a sudden he identifies and that lights up, that could be interesting. But I personally don't really feel the K2. I think it's very fallible. And it picks up, everything. I mean, from radio frequencies. I don't buy into it. So I quit doing that. But that was also for identification purposes. You know, obviously when it's pitch black. And if, you know, we weren't, you know, I mean, if you're not looking through IR or full spectrum or whatever cameras you're using, it's easy to identify where he's at for safety precaution in a larger venue. You know, you don't want your dog getting away and getting lost because he's down looking for something and, you know, you hear a noise and you turn and look and next thing you know, your dog's gone. So, but I try not to because that would throw off his vision because, again, the low light is where he sees best. So to put a flashlight on there, you're creating that bright spot and it's kind of like, for us, it would be like walking out after a movie and going outside, you know, that kind of that shock factor. So it's going to dilate the pupils in basically, in essence, you know, remove his vision capability. You know,
just,
it's good for safety purposes and all that, but if you, it depends on what you're doing. If you don't want the dog reacting, then that's a good idea.
I felt like my son had a lot of experiences in my own home when my dog was there. And so I just felt like, you know, if I'm going to be, you know, taking him and letting him, you know, kind of get comfortable with his gift, because that's what I was doing. I was trying to teach him, because he was so frightened, and I just, you know, hooked up with some groups, but, you know, to help teach him that it was okay, and to kind of, you know, so he could kind of test out, you know, what he was capable of doing, and I just think that, like, for him, it was the right choice. You know, he felt safe with my dog, you know. But
yeah,
I know
there's that camaraderie. Absolutely, that human canine bond is, you know, you can't dispute that. And you know, they're not judgmental. They take you for whoever you are. And all I personally am the most insensitive person as far as you know, spiritual ability and stuff like that. Not just being, well, I'm a dude, so I'm insensitive too, but it's, you know, to try and wrap your head around those types of experiences when I know in my lifetime I'm convinced I'll never have anything like that. I'll never feel anything or see these types of, or I'm not going to have those experiences. So to relate to it, as someone like me, is hard as an outsider. I mean, you know, I can't dismiss it, but that's short-sighted to say, since I can't have these experiences, they don't happen. I mean, that's irresponsible. But to not be able to have me can't relate to it, and you can't confirm it. So, but when you have a dog, I mean, they are on such a different level, and they're so passionate, and they're such great students of human behavior. I mean, they know when you're unhappy and sick or, you know, the full gamut of emotions, your dogs are going to react to it, because they watch our every move. They look for tells and try and identify what we're going to do next. That's what they do. So that's one of the cool things. So absolutely, I mean, to have that bond with a dog when you're dealing with these types of things is probably, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I mean, I played one on TV, but probably the best prescription.
Yeah.
One thing that I remember you mentioned earlier in conversation was that you do not do audio with your dog. Why?
Right. Because I'm a super freak when it comes to doing audio recording. I'm almost not fun to go out with. I don't like the term investigate, but I'm not fun to go out in the field because I hyper tag. Every sound I identify, that was me. And I'm tagging for other people. I mean, a lot of people, you know, after going out with me for a bit, get to that point where they're going to beat me to the punch. Like, yes, I know that was my stomach. I, you know, I'm hungry. But with the dog, they're going to have, you know, just their breathing. You know, we don't pant.
Yeah, they do make a lot of noise. They do.
Yeah, the sniffing because... Yeah, they're sniffing because the way they, you know, we would pass out if we were dogs, because dogs are continually drawing air in, and basically their mouths are little laboratories identifying all the molecules and things that they're smelling. So that's why a dog can continually draw air in, because if they're pulling air in, those little slits on the side of their nose, that's where air is being forced out, so they can keep sucking air in to identify what's going on, to see if there's any danger, what's going on, if there's a treat. But that thing is, you know, our hearing range is a little more limited, but that's going to come on. You may not even hear it, but it's going to show up on your digital recorders, and you're going to hear it, and it's going to sound like something pretty scary, and you're going to sit there, and you're going to listen to it and amplify it, and you're going to make it, you know, like, I think it's saying this. So, in essence, you're guaranteeing...
Like, you're walking around, and their claws are, like, clicking on
exactly,
the
clicking on... Yeah, I mean, there's so many different sounds that a dog's going to make that picked up on a recorder, especially the recorders that I like to use, these older school ones, you got to be real careful with that. And chances are more likely than not that any evidence you get is going to be some kind of a contaminant and have an absolutely natural explanation. So it's just safer for me. Again, you know, everyone can do what they want to do, but I would not present any audio. You know, for example, at the show we did, the Cecil Hotel, he identified, this was really cool. We were down in the basement, and they've got all these mattresses down there. And I send him to do his thing. He immediately goes, he turns around from where I'd sent him. He goes all the way around the room, and there's this pile of mattresses. And he goes and he identifies one kind of in the middle that's wrapped in, the only one's wrapped in black plastic. And he's giving me the sign that there's something going on. There's something going on. I'm getting a feel. I won, you know, come pet me. And so I went over there, and sure enough, and we'd done all our baselines, it was there. It was kicking off, you know, bouncing between a 2 and a 3 milligauss, where there was, you know, the baselines were zero off this mattress. And so he identified the field, and then all of a sudden I remember that, you know, hotels, this is a national law. If someone dies in a hotel room on a mattress, you can't reuse it, period.
Yeah.
And it's considered biohazard because the biologicals. So you can't just throw it in the dumpster. You actually have to have it taken by a biohazard removal specialist, like you would syringes, you know, from a medical clinic or something like that. So what they'll do is they'll stack these bad boys up, and eventually they'll have someone come in and do a bulk raid on them. So the thing is, it was interesting. You have this one that's wrapped in plastic. He's identifying it. There's an EM hit on it. So immediately I take him and put him up and come back and do a session on it, and got an intelligent response off the mattress asking, you know, talking about this specific mattress, saying, you know, I have a feeling I know what happened to you. I'm not certain. And got the intelligent response, which was cool. But if he was in there, and that's the thing that's kind of frustrating, is I couldn't just, like, drop everything and, you know, throw down a quick sesh because he was breathing and all that, and so I would have had to dismiss it. So, I don't know. It's just, to me, I just want to never really put forth something that I haven't completely gone through and eliminated all variables, because definitely that's what we do. Paranormal, by definition, is something that has no natural explanation. An EVP, when a dog's in the room, to me, right out of the gate, there's a natural explanation, no matter how good it is. So that's my own personal opinion, and it's how I roll. But
right.
I'm not saying I'm wrong or right, but that way no one can come to me and say, well, that was your dog. I'm like, no, it wasn't, because I don't record audio when he's on site.
Our friend Matt from Full Spectrum Radio, he's in the chat, and he's got a question.
Guy, he's trouble.
I know, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, speaking of trouble, I mean, I knew it was coming.
he said, for people who are interested in possibly using their dog for investigation, are there any breeds that you think wouldn't fit the training?
You know, I think this is more specific to the individual dog. Dogs are as unique individually as we are as people. Some dogs are going to be predisposed with their senses to maybe excel a little bit more. Your sight hounds, your working dogs, like your German Shepherds and all that, you know, they have a better ability to see in the dark. But all dogs have, you know, regardless of the breed, exceed what we can do tenfold. The German Shepherds, those types of working dogs, I mean, that's what they do by design. They love this stuff. So I think that they might be better as a prepackaged dog, they would probably be a better choice. Now, like I said before, if you have a dog that's nervous, I don't care if you've got, you know, a police-trained dog that's now hypersensitive, it's not going to be a good candidate. So you can't just strictly say that it's going to go off a breed. It's going to be off the individual dog and their desire, their willingness to please. Because if you got a dog that's, you know, yeah, my dog's not skittish, but it's indifferent and it's aloof and doesn't care and, you know, doesn't want to be trained and it's going to do what it wants to do, again, that's probably not a good candidate. So it's pretty tough because, you know, no one wants to look at their dog. You know, it's like, you know, your friends, you don't want to sit and identify and look for flaws, but you really need to know that your dog, you're not setting your dog up for failure because that's not fair to you or the dog, dog training or the paranormal. So you just got to look for certain things, the confidence level, the ability to please, and those are probably two of the biggest things. I mean, it's tough to train, you know, sometimes smaller dogs that, you know, might be indifferent. I love kind of dogs called Salukis. and sighthounds. They're a little more aloof. I don't know that they would be, you know, a great candidate, but I've seen some great performance level Salukis doing obedience. So right there, that shoots holes in my theory. So it's just your individual dog. If your dog, you know, I think some of the really small dogs, you got to look at safety as well. I mean, to look at maybe like a Yorkie or a Chihuahua, I don't really see them doing much as far as scent work stuff goes. But I'm not a dog racist. If the dogs will, if you do some of the stuff and you can do some basic scent work with just treats, you know, go for it. But I mean, the first thing, first rule is making sure that you got to respect locations and you got to respect safety. And sometimes the smaller dogs in dark situations, it's a little more dangerous. So you got to be a realist. But those would be my suggestions. So I wouldn't identify certain breeds. I'd identify certain dogs.
Yeah. Your buddy Daniel has a question for you. He wants to know, is Sexy an accident?
No, Sexy is no accident, and Pretty doesn't happen by itself, and everyone needs to write that down.
Awesome. That's what I'm
talking
about.
That's the thing. If I don't tell everyone how awesome I am, they would never know, so that's my duty. It's one of those things you apparently it's not abundantly clear enough, so I'm constantly convincing people of that.
Oh, okay.
So, good question. Thanks.
Now I've lost what I was actually going to say because I was reading the chat.
That's what I'm talking about. I can't do it. I have to turn off my monitor or you lose me for good. I mean, I'm the silver fox. I mean, the gray hair isn't just for looks. It really, I forget what I've, you know, had for breakfast this morning, so. I'm the grayest under 40 guy with memory problems you'll ever meet. So that's why I went into paranormal. I mean, that's a true story. So I could justify the voices in my head. People wouldn't judge
right.
me.
Now, with you've taken your dog to several locations. Have you noticed that depending on the type of location, your dog has more results depending on what it is, whether it's a hospital or a jail or just a haunted building. Have you looked into any of the correlations of depending on where the, you know, because like a hospital, you know, if there is spirits there that were in, say, a tuberculosis hospital or whatever, there's not going to be, when they were alive, there's not going to be dogs walking down the hospital hallway. Right. So I'm wondering if there's a different correlation depending on where you introduce an animal to that environment. Depends on the, you know, can kind of affect the results.
You know, it's a great point too, and I didn't touch on that yet. I try to not get too soapboxy when I talk about the dog, but I mean, talk about a trigger object. I said it before about fire. If you lived your life, you know, you've had some kind of interaction with fire. It's just part of being human. I think the same thing goes for dogs. You either like them, you're indifferent, or you are scared of them. So to get those types of reactions, it goes back to what I was saying about audio, which it's a huge bummer. I mean, you know, I'd love nothing more than to run some audio when the dog's around to see if we could maybe get something that's, you know, intelligent, you know, to the dog. And not saying that I wouldn't do it if I got anything. I'd keep it to myself just for my own personal collection. Never put it out there, but, you know, and try and be real conscious as to all that. But that's the thing is, I mean, it's a great trigger object. There's people who love dogs. You're in a hospital. I mean, people, they're service dogs. You know, I've got a lot of friends that do this where they train their dogs to be service dogs and I'm silver foxing out right here. What's it called? It's something. It's the thing where you go and you take classes and your dog goes to hospitals and things like that. And I'm not going to remember what it is. But they do that. I mean, Primary Children's Medical Center here, they've got a lot of my friends will go up with their dogs and they'll go around and visit the patients. And then there's a healing aspect to it. I mean, it's such a, you know, that bond, there's so much to it. They're saying that people that have dogs live longer, and there's all these studies that are proving these properties. Our minds are capable of so much. And to have
that. Yeah, dogs are amazing. I mean, they can detect cancer and where it's at.
Exactly. Smell.
Yeah.
I've got a friend that trains diabetic alert dogs. When your blood sugar drops, you put off a distinct scent. And the dog alerts, and when you have a diabetic reaction, and sometimes it can be too late to where you can't, you almost lose control physically to where you can't, you know, your mind kind of, it's almost like you're passing out and all that. These dogs, you know, have saved people's lives dozens of times where they're saying, hey, you know, you're putting that smell off. They're coming up and alerting, and they test and they need insulin or to eat something or whatever. It's a smell. I mean, you know, when we're sick, we
stink
to dogs.
Those are working dogs, you know, when they're actually working to, you know, for people, for their health and stuff like that. People who have
service dogs, they do some really, really neat stuff. And I'm ashamed of myself right now. I want to punch myself in the face because I can't remember what it's called.
What?
Wait a minute. Let me go in the chat. Julie, you said you were listening. Oh, man, I already shut it down. Julie, if you're out there, what am I missing? What's it called that, like, Fosters and all those people do where they have their dogs and they get certified to go? It's not service dogs. So if you're out there, Jules, and you're in the chat, throw that out there so I quit tunnel visioning on what this is. It's neither here nor there. The whole point is taking, you know, let me get back to the original thing before I go too far off the beaten path. Dogs are going to be a trigger object, like it or not, and I have had responses after the fact identifying the dog's presence, which is really cool. So, otherwise,
Matt,
I'm going to sit here all night and try and remember that term.
Matt says it's therapy dogs, and Daniel
therapy
says
dogs.
It's
thank you, Matt.
Daniel
thank
says
you.
It's hot dogs.
Huh?
Daniel says it's hot dogs.
That's the slang term for it. Therapy dog's the official term on the certificate you get when you go through the training. So they're both right.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, and getting back, actually, I didn't even answer your question. The locations, I mean, you get what you get. So I haven't necessarily noticed, you know, more of a reaction or anything. I've had reactions from him at an old hospital, at an old theater, at an old jail, hotel, another theater, and then there was a bunch of other locations where we didn't get anything
The thing
is, you know, reactions are, you know, iffy. So when I say we got something, that means we had a corroborating piece of evidence that went along with the reaction. It wasn't audio. So those are the locations. So I've had them at, you know, pretty much the full gamut. I've never taken them to, like, any sort of a, you know, safety first. And there's some places I would love to take them to. You know, some places aren't going to let dogs in, and other places just aren't safe. There's broken glass and, you know, some of these old abandoned places, you know, the Urban X type of joints you're not going to take your dog to.
About that with my dog.
About what?
I always worried about that with my dog. I would only take him to places that I know were, like, you know, clean and okay for, you know, children to run around. You know what I'm saying? Like, nice.
Exactly.
Clothes.
Yeah. And he won't wear the booties. Like, I wanted to do search and rescue training with him where, I mean, you're walking over rubble piles and stuff, you know, natural disasters or, you know, whatever
right.
it would be. And those dogs have to wear those types of things. You've got, you know, live wires and jagged edges and screws and concrete, rebar, all that. And he's not biting at all. It just pisses him off. He gets mad at me. He's like, I'm not wearing this sissy stuff. So, but if you did that, I guess in theory you could go to some of those more, you know, I mean, if you look at them, I mean, look at these dogs that do search and rescues, and these, you know, German Shepherds and Malinois. I mean, they're running over the stuff with no problem. They can cover, you know, something that would take humans half a day in 5 minutes, you know.
Right.
So that's the thing. They do have that ability. It's just not something I'm really willing to do, and I think that someone would really need to have those. I would really suggest you to have the search and rescue background, before you would do something of that nature, and not just, you know, throw some shoes on your dog and go do that. But
right. Yeah. Yeah, I know you don't run EVPs when you have your dog in there, but when you put your dog up, have you ever gotten any EVPs, reactions, or comments about the dog? Like, you know, where'd the dog go, or any of those kind of things?
Actually, yes, and that's what I was saying before, that, you know, it's heartbreaking to not be able to do it, live. You know, real time, to just, you know, whip out the recorder and say, hey, you know, come pet my dog and tell me what you think. But I have, I think, three different occasions got intelligent responses that I would consider class A, that were, you know, that's the thing where if I have to listen to it several times and try and figure out what it's saying, then I really have to dismiss it, you know, because at that point you're going to start, that's what we do as people. That's why our brains are set up. We're problem solvers. And we make sense of things that don't make sense. So there's been three different occasions, though, that were, you know, just right out of the gate where, you know, my jaw's hitting the floor because it's a reaction directly, specifically to the dog. One actually called him out by name.
Wow. Now that's cool.
I got an EVP after I put him back that said the captain, which was really, really cool.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So... like I said, I mean, it's, you know, there's so many different reasons. They're better equipped in all of their senses, trigger objects. They're not going in with any preconceived notions. I mean, they're far better equipped to be paranormal investigators than we are. So if we can train ourselves, you know, the training them's not hard, but training ourselves, I really think that's the next step if we do it responsibly. I think we can really kind of get to some intriguing places and, you know, get out of the basement screaming at flashlights. I think we can maybe come up with a little better result.
Well, that, and, you know, for a lot of the paranormal community, when they're dealing with residential cases, if they got a background in canine investigations and especially behavioral aspects to animals in general, and then when they're talking to the clients and, you know, they talk about their cat or their dog doing different things in the home, reacting to things that are going on, then us as paranormal investigators have more of an understanding of what those animals are actually experiencing.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point, because we do need to, you know, if we're going to utilize canine investigators, we need to understand animal behavior. And if you think you do, you don't. You have to know that you do, and by doing that, you have to dig in, you have to spend some time, get your hands dirty, do the research, and you got to look at your own dog. I mean, I've spent so many hours being a creeper watching my dog in social situations just to identify, here's what happens when a new dog comes up to him. You know, here's his reaction. Here's when a stranger comes up to him. I am making mental note. You know, those things, because, yeah, you can look at an illustrated guide, but that's not showing you what your dog reacts to. So the thing is to identify that and then watch your dog in those situations. And so many times people will tell me stories of how their dogs see ghosts, and, you know, they get mad at me. I'm like, you know, what do you think about that? And they explain it to me, and I tell them, I'm like, quite frankly, it doesn't sound like anything. If your dog's staring at a wall and there's a ghost there, you're going to see it before he would.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I know what dogs see. The research is done. I read up. I mean, it's not really possible. Their spectrum. You know, we look at the spectrum. You know, people like to use full spectrum, going into the IR and UV levels and all that. Dog's vision spectrum is less than ours. They can see better in dark, mm-hmm. and they can see things more clearly that are moving quickly. But they're about half of where we're at. They're not colorblind, but they don't see nearly the spectrum of light that we do. So they don't like hearing that, though. And that's the thing. residentials, you never really want to take, you know, it's the right tool for a job. There's no sense in taking a dog to a residential, because dog is a good resource when you have a lot of ground to cover. You know, you got an auditorium, you know, to walk through there with your K2 meter is going to take you forever. When a dog can sweep through and pick up anything and, you know, and cover that area and points you in the right direction, then he's going to, you know, he or she's going to be a good resource. You know, in a, you know, 1,500 square foot house, you can easily cover that with your own stuff. And a dog is really going to be overkill. And so it's, you know, it's the right tool for the job. I mean, I don't see really any of those applications unless it was a you know, a mansion to where a dog would really be helpful on a residential.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying, because we deal with a lot of residential cases, and they'll always talk about their experiences, and they'll also talk about their animals' experiences, you know. And
yep.
I, as an investigator, need to do more in the reading up on animal behavior so that I have more of an idea of what these animals are doing or not seeing or not experiencing like the client thinks they are, because they're humanizing it, like I said earlier.
Yep. 9 out of 10 times, it's just going to be a dog being a dog. However, you know, I've seen it firsthand, and there's some people that have told me some things that I think that there's a real solid potential that their dog is, whatever the circumstances that they described to me, that it could have a paranormal explanation. I mean, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say it did. I wasn't there. But, you know, chances are there's some things that they're saying, and it all fits from what my research is to the potential of that. But that's the one thing. Dogs aren't psychics. I know they've got this extra sense that, you know, that people talk about, and there's a lot of reading I've been doing on that, and I think it's a lot to do with electro. I mean, this is a whole other topic, but I think that dogs, part of their survival instincts is electromagnetic. That's why I like to do that training with the captain. The tsunami in Japan, a bunch of feral dogs before the wave hit, you know, with time, went inland, just hightailed it inland, like they knew the wave was coming. And the seismic activity, tsunamis are generated from seismic activity, earthquakes in the ocean. And my belief is that they smell that, and that's, you know, because it's putting off, you know, the geomagnetic energy is their instincts take over. And they turn and head for the hills. And so I don't think that it's necessarily that they're having a precog moment where they're envisioning the wave hitting and they're like, uh-oh, you know, it's time to head for the hills. It's just straight survival instincts. And so getting back to the original point, I think that you need to be able to identify the difference of a dog being a dog and the types of things that could substantially mean something. And that's the tough part, is a lot of people just want to say, I get the stories all the time, you know, being the face of the guy who, you know, claims to have trained the first dog out there. A lot of people, you know, are volunteering things to me, and they don't like my answer. But the thing is, I did the research to be able to get those answers, and it would be short-sighted and irresponsible of me for to say, yeah, your dog sees ghosts. I can't even say mine does indefinitely. I can't even say ghosts exist. But I can work on my theories and try to do the best job that I can and help people. So...
And, you know, it's just like if they can smell, you know, electricity, electromagnetic field, and, of course, their hearing is a lot better than ours. You know, animals, like my dog tonight, before I knew the thunderstorms were coming our way, but she was already reacting and getting kind of anxious before the first thunder hit or lightning. And, you know, so, you know, animals in general, they know when storms are coming before we do. And I
absolutely
thought that really interesting.
Yeah, thunderstorms, yeah, it ionizes the air. They detect that. They know it's coming. You know, barometric pressure changes. I mean, those types of things, they're far more sensitive to it. So it's, you know, we're desensitized as humans. We've de-evolved, as far as I'm concerned, because we have this expectation of safety anymore. You know, back, 200 years ago, people walk out and your biggest fear was you might get attacked by a bear on the way to work, or killed at your job as something collapses on you, or you would get dysentery. You know, those were real fears. I mean, we're not scared anymore. You know, someone might be an idiot driving and cut you off and, you know, get your heartbeat going, but we don't have, we feel safe. And so we're de-evolving. They are continually evolving in their senses, and that's the whole thing. I mean, their first knee-jerk reaction is, am I in danger? Is something I love in danger? And then it's, you know, down the list to, this smells good, can I eat it, and all that. But that's their first primary thing all the time is, am I safe? Is this dangerous? Are my loved ones safe? And so they have the ability to do these things. I mean, you know, when storms are coming in, they can smell it. They can feel the pressure changes and know that, hey, you know what, we might need to gather some food and dig in for a little bit. Because, you know, back in the day, you'd have your den, and if you're going to get a couple feet of snow, you got to have enough food to eat in, or it's hard to scavenge and go take down a deer in a couple feet of snow. So they can, I'm soapboxing again, but yeah, they can do some really awesome stuff.
Yeah. And I can't remember, Matt came in late, so I don't know. I know we talked about it a little bit when we were talking about Jody's dog, but he had a question, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there before the show ends. Matt asks, what do you think of house dogs versus how wolves' brains work, more in a direct breed like a husky or a malamute?
So domesticated working dogs versus wolves, how
yeah.
their minds work?
Yeah.
Kind of goes hand in hand with what I just said. There's an expectation of safety on a domesticated dog. They still have their built-in instincts and all that, but a wolf is probably one of nature's most refined, well-evolved machines. So they're going to be a lot sharper. They work in packs. They're a more simple animal because they're reactionary. They still have the sentient aspects, kind of like dogs, cats, birds, horses, and primates do. But they're not going to be – they're going to have more advantages as far as survival instincts and those types of things go. They're going to be – their senses are going to be more fine-tuned. But as far as a social animal goes, your domesticated dog is, you know, tens of thousands of years in evolution, you know, far ahead away, even in your working dogs like your Malamutes, your Huskies, your Akitas, and dogs that are most closely related to their ancestors, they're still behaviorally and in domesticated, I mean, totally different creatures.
Right. Well, cool.
I agree with you.
Oh,
my gosh.
Well, would you like to
world is
grow
between what's that, Kevin?
I was just going to give him the opportunity to, if anybody wanted to reach out to him about, you know, training their dog or about haunted encounters or anything, you can throw out your websites and whatever else to contact you.
Yeah, way earlier, like I said, I logged out of the chat, so I don't know if there's been a lot of activity in there, but Dan was kind enough to put all of our information in there. If you want to do the dog thing or you're interested in that or just have questions, as you've noticed over the course over the past couple hours, I have no problem talking about it. You can find me on Facebook, Facebook.com/TheHelmy. Captain's on there too. You can look him up. He's Captain Para K9. So if you're interested in the dog stuff, the show information, the best thing to do is just go to the official site where you just go on Facebook and it's the Haunted Encounters official site. Just go and search that. The Paranormal Syndicate, which is the team, is on Facebook, and all of these are also on Twitter as well. So if you're a hashtagger like myself, that's another place where you can go keep up with our endeavors. But that would probably be the first place I would suggest is just the Haunted Encounters official one on Facebook.
Nice.
Or if you want to be my friend, I'm kind of awesome. I'll tell you I am. I'll accept it. I'm not scared.
Sweet. Man, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. I've learned a lot tonight talking to you about, you know, dogs and the paranormal.
That was my
pleasure.
It
was a pleasure to meet you and talk to you as well on my end.
Well, thanks. I like like-minded people where I can kind of get up on my soapbox and people don't want to immediately dismiss it. A lot of people struggle with it. You know, I don't care if they're not dog people or are dog people. You know, people have a hard time with it, and it's easy for them to kind of poke fun or immediately write it off or, you know, say I'm a kook. But to really dig in and understand, you know, where I'm going with this and how I did it and the work I put into it, and to know me as an individual, that I would never I've had a lot of successes in life. I've done pretty well in a lot of different things. To go out and, you know, completely undo everything I've ever done on national TV isn't my style. I absolutely believe that it works. A lot of people that were a little kind of iffy about it have seen it in person. I'm able to demonstrate it, you know, on call. I mean, it's not anything I need to set up. It's like, yeah, you know, let's grab a, you know, a pump. You hide it. Take the dog somewhere else and, you know, turn up the stereo and he'll go find it and show you where it is. I mean, it's not so outlandish, but some people, like I said, you know, might struggle with it. So it's really cool for me to have the opportunity to talk to people who are receptive and understand it and are dog people and all that. So really the pleasure's all mine.
Cool.
Obviously, because we were, what, an hour and 55 minutes into this, and you guys have had maybe, what, 4 minutes of collective time to talk?
Oh, no. I enjoy it. When I'm not saying anything, I'm soaking it all in.
There you go.
Well, I'd like to thank you again for coming on the show. It was fun talking to you, and hopefully we can do it again.
Absolutely. And, you know, next time we can maybe go into some other stuff, too. I don't mean to just hijack everything and insist on talking about dogs. There's a lot of other different areas that we could go into, but I absolutely look forward to it, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Cool.
Thank you so much. And good luck with everything, and I'll probably contact you. I'll do some stuff with my dog, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I'm real impartial. Anyone that's interested in this and, you know, has some conviction, I mean, it takes a little bit of work, I'm not going to lie, but it's the coolest free instrument you could ever have for ghost hunting if you put the work into it. So I'm all for it. I think we need a whole community of paracanines out there doing their thing.
Yeah, I'll definitely be talking to you so that I can start getting my dog ready.
Good deal.
All right.
Sounds like
well,
a problem to me.
Have a
well,
good
you have, yeah, you have a great night.
Well, and, you know, again, thanks for having me on, and look forward to it, and let's do this again.
Okay.
Will do.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll jump off here and let you have your last 3 minutes to talk amongst yourselves, huh? Oh, thank God he's gone. Hey, thanks again.
All right.
Good night.
All right. Bye.
All right. That was Helmut Kramer from Haunted Encounters. You can check all his stuff out, like you said earlier, on the links. That was something that I've always thought about and I've told you about, but I've never actually been able to interview somebody that's got a lot of knowledge in that side of the paranormal. So that was really cool.
Yeah. I enjoyed it as well. I used to do that back in the day with my dog, so I think it's cool that he's doing that, and you know, he seems to know a lot too, you know.
Oh yeah,
about
definitely.
It.
Definitely, and I want to also throw out a thanks to Matt from Full Spectrum Radio. He's the one that hooked Jody and I up with this interview tonight. So I want to say thank you, Matt, for doing that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and just and to do the promoting like I always do for the network. Tomorrow, join Dennis and Matt on Full Spectrum Radio, 8 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Unknown Network. And we don't have a guest yet next week, Jody, so we'll be working on that.
I'll get on it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Before we go, my wolf just came in here. So do you want to hear him howl? I can get him to howl for us.
Go ahead.
Okay, hold on. Oh, get out of there. Oh, hold on. Oh. Okay, I'm going to put on a video of a dog howling, okay? And he'll just start freaking out. Uh-oh. Oh, he started.
Dang.
Hold on. He'll get going crazy in a second. Isn't that awesome? We howl at each other.
That's funny. My dog's sitting here trying to figure out what in the hell is going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh. Ah, that's a wrap.
That is a wrap. So,
All right. Anyway,
for everybody, thanks for tuning in, and we will be back next Tuesday. And, of course, Full Spectrum Radio tomorrow. Thursday is Ghost Hunting Style. And next Sunday on Unknown Paranormal Radio, my host is Sasha Hayden, who had to reschedule, so she'll be on Paranormal Community Against Bullying. So we'll be here on Sunday. So, all right. We will end this now. So everybody have a good night. See if I ever get my internet back up to end the show. Well, that's funny. My internet goes down right as I'm trying to end the show.
Well, we are still
on the air. I'm going to get him to howl some more while you're doing your thing.
All right.
You get it yet?
Not yet. I'm working on it. Trying to keep the...
Do you want me to see what I can do on my end? I can end it.
Do it.
Do you want me to end it?
Do it.